Senior Focus.
Welcome, everyone. I'm Anne-Marie Currie, and I'm the presenter today for Senior Focus. Our topic is the elections at council here, how we want to talk about that, since it's such a big topic. I've divided it into sections, but I'm thinking primarily that we will look at the impact around the voting process and what might take place next time. So it's quite a big topic, and there's quite a bit to consider, because there were a lot of problems with the election this time, and it wasn't just a low turnout. Now, I have with me in the studio a very interesting guest today, and I want to introduce Tim Coffey. He's one of the founders and a long-time chair and secretary of the Auckland City Centre Residents Group. Welcome, Tim.
Hello, Anne-Marie. How are you?
I'm good, and we were going to have a really interesting discussion this morning. Now, you also may have a third person join this discussion. We'll see whether they actually come in or not. I guess post-elections, it's a bit hard for some people. Now, the reason I've invited you in is that you, Tim, have a 30-plus year history of being a resident of the city centre, and that's the first time we've had anyone with that kind of background coming on air in this program, and I think you've got an excellent perspective on what it's like for seniors living in the city centre, what it's like for seniors in social housing, and a view towards the future of, you know, what can be improved.
I certainly agree with what you say. Not only have I lived in the city centre, but I've worked there as well, and I still work. But I have had employment with Auckland City Council in various forms in the past and so forth as well. So both in terms of work as in life, I'm really focused on the city centre.
Yeah, and I think that sometimes it's a microcosm of what other parts of the city might become like as the city intensifies. And I think from that perspective, it's really useful to have your views.
That may happen. I would like to see a city as large as Auckland have a diversity of options and a diversity of feels to it. And I'm not saying the city centre has hegemony on bigness. They do. Currently, the most densely populated area in New Zealand, the 493 hectares of the city centre. But, I mean, you know, other areas are equally important, be it be Point Shiver, Takapuna, and so forth. And the efforts that are being done about creating satellite focuses along transport axes and the new unitary plan and all the other stuff about intensification and all that that comes with it, we'll see a different city, but not at the sacrifice of any part.
That's a good vision to hold, and one that sometimes people don't manage to have in view when they get carried away with wanting to rant and rave against certain developments. But today we want to talk about the voting system. What struck me in particular and got me onto this topic and thinking about this topic for the session was on Saturday I went to cast a special vote, and the only place on the central isthmus I could do that was at Glen Eden Library. So I thought, well, I'm not going in the last 20 minutes of the game, because that would up the ante somewhat. I thought, well, I'd turn up at least at 11. And I expected it would take a time, but it actually took nearly 35 minutes. I was surprised at how many people were there, how many people were engaged in filling out forms at tables, how many people were in the queue, and that there were only two staff and one ballot box, which was already looking full to overflowing. Now, as it turned out, it probably took a staff person about 10 minutes to deal with my inquiry, mainly because she got two or three other requests that came at her in the middle of all of that. And there seemed to be a bit of struggle with actually how quickly they could actually get through stuff. So I don't know that any of these people had ever worked in this type of role before. So that was the first thing that came through to me. But the next thing was, after going to the table and with the papers and filling everything out, helping people that were struggling at the table as well, I got back to Re-Q, only to find that there was a woman in front of me, rather ashen-faced, being told that no, she wasn't going to be able to vote except for the mayor, because there were no voting papers left for her in the area she resided in. And they would use spare papers from another area and just simply stamp the columns void, apart from the mayoral column, and she could vote for the mayor but nobody else. And I think she looked quite startled, ashen-faced, gobsmacked, and, you know, it really sort of brought up a lot of questions in my mind. How come there weren't enough voting papers? How come the box was now really so bad that they had removed it? And so people who filled out papers had to wait around for the box to come back. And so this whole situation, as it unfolded, turned into being a queue of 20 people by 20 to 12. And I wondered really how many of those people actually got to vote. And it looked like, you know, anything but what you would want to have happening.
Well, of course, I wasn't there, but what you say surprises me because of the amount of effort every local authority in New Zealand has put into this election, let alone Auckland City. The incredible amount of effort in advertising and other forms of communication, all of which would have cost money, you know, to get people to vote, all of which I think is good because of the past history of low turnouts. But, you know, having gone that far down the track, you'd like to make sure your actual point of delivery, which is what you're talking about, special votes at Glenaden Library, is you know, capable at capacity, right?
Well,
and it surprises me because I have cast in local government special votes because I've been out of the country before the election and so forth. And I could have been in any local board area, and I could have, in the past, could have cast my vote, a special vote, if you know what I mean. So, I mean, obviously there is a mechanism there. Just doesn't seem to, by your description, have wedded with the delivery point.
Well, I thought about why did this happen? What, you know, perhaps why so many special votes that caused them to not have enough ballot papers? And then I started hearing other stories, like people's mailboxes. They only received the voting papers by the 8th of October. That didn't give them time to post them back. So they were forced to do a special vote or take it into a library. And, you know, there were more things unfolded as the conversations about my experience were shared. So it got me thinking that the mailing system is very slow these days, and the time allowance isn't really a fair allowance. So even saying you had to post back by the Wednesday, that's still skeptical in my book, because I've experienced a lot of mail takes 7 days, and so it wouldn't have got there if it had that type of response. So, you know, I thought we must be able to do something better. And certainly what I noticed was people actually wanted to be in the polling booth type situation. They were in an environment where they could just focus on the voting and no other distractions. And so I'm not keen on moving to online myself, because I can see not only is it not proven to be safe and unhackable, but, you know, the actual way in which people vote and discharge that duty to vote is is something that's important, and I think that to kind of mix it up with ordinary everyday life going on around you in a busy household where you get interrupted and you're not thinking straight, and, you know, I think that's a really moot point, that people like going to a polling booth. And if some people are saying we should be actually not only doing that, but we should be combining the two elections, the local government and the central government, and doing it all at the same time in a polling booth. That's the other option that I've heard. But certainly I'm interested in banding around what we should be doing to improve the voting system.
I'm not a particular fan of online voting because of its ability to be hacked. And that goes for apps as well. And I mean, we have recent records in other countries of implications regarding hacking of voting. Particularly, I think of the Russian allegations with Putin and the Trump campaign, which is an example. And I think we also do have to keep track of the fact that voting is a marker in life. You know, we used to, when I was young, 21 was achieving a majority. You could vote. You could drink. You could do a whole range of things. And people in this country, in New Zealand, people used to celebrate their 21st, and people used to have cakes in the shapes of keys and everything else. I mean, it was quite a marker. And I think that voting in itself is another one of those markers. And I think people should be more aware of that. And appreciate it, respect it, and execute it.
Indeed. And then, of course, there's the thing of whether, in fact, we need to do something about the low turnout and actually make voting compulsory. Well, and on that score, I mean, in Australia it's compulsory and there are decent fines if you don't vote. Here we can fine people if they don't enrol, but it doesn't happen that often. So there's a bunch of people who aren't even on the roll who don't vote, and then there's plenty who are on the roll but don't do it, and they might do it at the national elections, but they don't bother with the council elections.
Well, different countries have different psyches collectively, and New Zealand is generally what I'd say low on compulsion. And on the other hand, I mean, in historically, people have had to lay down their lives for the right to vote. Not just women getting the vote in 1893. I'm talking about even earlier in history. And you know, it's that sort of critical mass of appreciation that you have to have. Anyway, New Zealand, as far as compulsion, well, we have general election. My own view is that New Zealand spends too much time and too much money on elections because you have 2-3 year cycles, either for local government or central government, not synchronized. And for general elections, yes, you have to go to the poll. So if you could synchronize both cycles and both go to the poll, you could achieve attendance. And then people say, well, what if I don't? There's nobody I like. Well, in the Australian manner, on the ballot, there's a thing you can check that says I'm not interested in any of them, but you still vote, right? And it's, you know, I think it would address people's hands-on appreciation of what's happening to them in terms of their governors as well as their right as electors.
Yeah, I can see advantages and disadvantages. Perhaps around the country, it is workable. But if you've got district health boards and they continue to have elections for some of the district health board positions, then that seems to be about the sticking point. When people were voting, what I noticed was they got through the first three columns all right, but they kind of hit a brick wall, and they were tired and they'd finished, they felt, and then they had to face the district health board and the ordering of the voting and so on. And even the size of the list of the candidates was daunting. And I think, imagine if you had to also vote for the national and you had two decisions to do there. You had to vote for the candidate and the party on top of the district health board. I wonder whether people might just, yeah, you could get them to the booth maybe, but maybe they wouldn't do all the columns. Maybe there would be less actual active voting at the actual site. And that worries me somewhat, because I think the complexity of the decision-making and the, you know, I guess if people worked it all out in advance and they had all the materials in front of them in advance, they might be able to go pre-prepared and do it. But I'm not in favour of putting the two together. I think it's, but I am in favour of polling booths as a place, because I think it gives respect and time and consideration to making the decision to separate it out from other activities in life clearly, and it actually allows people to decide and make the decision and make the mark independent of any pressure. That's the beauty of a polling booth. Now, there are too many cases of women who are coerced into signing in particular ways and don't have the freedom, really, to cast their vote as a free person, but they would at a polling booth, and that would be guaranteed, and I think that's very important.
Well, consider that we're talking about seniors in this program. There is such a thing as called elder abuse, and I'm sure there's elder manipulation of your ballot.
Yeah. I'm sure there is. Yeah. Doesn't only apply to seniors, but, I mean, they are vulnerable, and people do target them, particularly in rest home environments. And it'll be interesting to see how the specials, when they come in this time, those who are in areas where there are a lot of retirement villages, that will be very, very interesting tie-up. Now, I guess also there's the question about the age that you should vote, and there's a movement in Parliament at the moment to lower this age of 18 down to 16. So you mentioned about the key and the markers, if you like, into early adulthood and an older decision maker. And so lowering it down to 16 is quite an interesting concept. Now, it will work for some parts of the population. I've listened to some of the 18-year-old candidates, and they're very articulate and very forthright and very knowledgeable. And I would have no difficulty in voting for some of them if they were you know, in my orbit and ready as candidates. So would 16-year-olds have sufficient grasp of our voting system and the choices and the complexity of ideas behind various options? Would they be well enough versed to do the voting?
This gets back to your discussion note of civics being taught.
Hmm.
Right, which is not the custom in New Zealand currently.
No.
It would be really nice if it could be appended to history in the schools, as is the new intention. But if people in their adolescence were properly educated, I don't see why they couldn't make an informed decision at 16. I really don't. And as it is now, perhaps not. But in a future situation with adequate education opportunities in their course of their education, I think it would work. I mean, what I'd really like to do, I personally think, for instance, it was a tragic mistake in New Zealand lowering the drinking age from 21 to 18. But that is, so I'm not going to contest that. If we had 16-year-olds with the vote, but never the drinking age until they're 18, they would be the most rigorous critics of their older peers getting off their face. They really would.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's another aspect of the advantage of empowering the 16-year-olds. I mean, we have recent worldwide experience on the young lady from Scandinavia, Greta
Thornburg.
Thornburg.
Yep.
All right, but anyway, I mean, she's an example of a very young person who's under 16, you know, actually making a statement. And I think we'd see more of that if people were empowered by the vote at a younger age, because their whole life is in front of them.
And I take again the point about the civics education. I think that has to, in my book, if you opened up the voting at 16 but you didn't provide the civics education, I think that would be a complication. So I wouldn't actually want to favour it unless it was coming tagged with that extra education backing. I think we need civics education anyway quite badly, because that's partly why people don't see the need to vote for their local council, and they don't see how important it is. Climate change may be changing this, and young people's grasp of the issues around climate change and commitment to doing something about it, I think is driving a lot of thinking in this area. So maybe it'll all come together.
Just remember that the outgoing Auckland Council recently declared climate emergency, right? Mm. And you know that local authorities themselves, let alone having an electorate that is 16 year old, all right, are actually acknowledging the issue, all right? So adding young people's thrust to it would probably complement other activities already in place, really.
Indeed. I'm thinking about something that the Puke Te Papa local board invested heavily in, and also Kai Pātaki local board has done on the North Shore, and that's to have children's panels. And these panels are set up, the schools help select the pupils that are appropriate to go on to these panels. And the panels meet and discuss all kinds of civics topics. And it gives them the opportunity to debate ideas, to research, and to actually put ideas into action. And I know one particular school, the pupils decided they wanted to do something about mental health, and they decided to send positive messages into all the mailboxes of all the citizens surrounding the school. And then later, when they did a presentation to the board to show how this worked, they were able to read a letter from a family member who shared how a particularly depressed family member had been affected by this letter, how it brightened up his day, and, you know, how he took the letter out and read it several times over the next few days. And they could see a real change in him, just knowing that people in the community cared enough to send this letter. So the pupils themselves, you know, were actually embracing of this panel concept and have done quite a lot about things that were affecting them. And another school, many of the pupils were moving because Housing New Zealand was redeveloping the area, and they were some of the first families affected. They had to move out of the area, and they were coming to their school still, but from afar. So they were travelling quite a long way from Otahu to Mount Roskill to go to school each day. And they talked about the feelings their parents had about the move, and how the anger and the frustration and the difficulties they had, and how it was threatening to them personally to not be able to talk with their friends at school and so on. And so the fact that they were able to process all this through having a children's panel seemed to me to be a wonderful mental health initiative. That wasn't the purpose of the panel, but that was a side offshoot advantage of having it. So civics education, gone about in a practical way through something like a children's panel concept, could be helping our students in schools, and they could be starting this early. I mean, I think the youngest were about 8 that were on these panels. And so if they had that kind of experience, it would make a difference when they got to 16.
It certainly would, but it's a message that needs to be repeated more than once in the education cycle.
Indeed.
And if one started at primary level, you would explain it at a level that primary students would understand.
Mm.
If you were doing it at intermediate or secondary level, you'd have a more sophisticated way of dealing with it because they could do it, but they'd get the same message again.
Mm.
And that would create a culture. You know, the people would expect, I am going to vote, you know?
I think that's what it's about. It's about a culture change, and it's about setting up dynamics that will enhance and lead to better outcomes. Now, today I was also thinking that we might reflect on some of the changes that are going to come through council, some of the things that council might decide. Obviously, it will have to decide any changes about the voting system, but some other things that might impact on seniors that will be around the council table. And I don't think we're going to have time to do that today, but I am conscious that we are both going to be at a forum this week, which is looking into the kind of implementation plan for Age Friendly that the council staff are drawing up. So I can see the value in us coming back in here and having further discussions along these lines. What I would say is that it's very exciting that we've got Mayor Gough back, because he's been a great advocate and supporter of the actual age-friendly city. And he is in the age bracket now, having got his gold card. He is starting to tune in from that perspective on a personal level. But he's also, I think, got a good grasp of the fact that there is a body of people working towards this change. And he is listening to the seniors panel. He's an advocate for the demographic panels. He's a supporter of the concept. And I was afraid the panels might go west if we had a change of mayor. So it's really good that he's there, and we know that he's going to be listening to the seniors panel, and he's going to be looking for this implementation plan and looking at how that's going to be adopted and what role local boards may play in this plan, because they're going to develop their three-year plans starting in February. And I think that they won't be fully consulted on and fully adopted until September next year. But that gives quite a bit of massage time and room for groups like ourselves, Senior Focus and Age Concern, Grey Power, other groups to come in and put pressure on their local boards. To at least be aware that we're not the invisible folk. We are going to be very visible and very much a part of their environment that they have to consider.
Well, definitely the future offers all sorts of options, positive options. Once the age-friendly Auckland policy is the terms and the time frames are announced, one could, for instance, create a strategy to deal specifically with seniors as far as getting them involved and militating them, you know, getting them arms up and active. My impression currently is that there's a variety of agencies dealing with seniors. But an overall strategy, I'm talking about Auckland Council, an overall strategy within that territory could produce very, in the long term, good results for the interest group, the seniors.
Well, I think one of the key things is that in the senior sector, there's not a lot of collaboration between seniors groups, because they tend to be quite isolated. And social isolation is a big key problem for seniors anyway, and it's part of the mental health deterioration situation. So that's another topic that we need to look at on another occasion. But there's definitely a need to share more information, for more people to know where to go, and for that to be centralised in some sort of directory. And I think that feedback is going back to council very strongly now. So it's watch this space to see what changes will eventuate. But I would love to have you back again, Tim. Thank you for the session today and for your ideas, and all the best. Get together with Senior Focus next Sunday at 5:25 p.m. on Planet FM 104.6, or listen online at any time at planetaudio.org.nz/seniorfocus.